Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and good afternoon and welcome to AgriTalk, a show where we feature information that's of use for farmers and people that like to grow stuff. So today I have Vinayak Shetikar, who works at OSU South Centers. He is a research assistant in the soil, water, and bioenergy field or office. So we're going to talk to you about soil health and how you can test for that and maybe keep your soil healthy.
Yep.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, where you come from, how you got here, and all that type of thing.
Sure. Thanks for having me. So I'm from India. I did my undergraduate and master's in agricultural engineering from India, and then I came here for my PhD in the ag engineering program at the Ohio State University. After that, I joined the OSU South Centers as a research associate, working with the soil and water and bioenergy program. And my main area of work has been water management, looking at the interaction of soil, water, and plants. So that's pretty much what I've been doing throughout my life. And since I came here, my focus has been also on agricultural drainage and basically things like that.
I was going to ask you what water management meant. Is it bodies of water, or is it underground water, or how it flows across land, or runoff? What is it?
Sure. Water management, you can use it at different scales. For agriculture, we usually refer to water management, where we manage water in and out of the system. By in, I mean something similar to irrigation, where you are managing your water in a way that it's coming into the agricultural system.
Like a non-natural.
Like a non-natural. Well, it is natural water.
Right.
So, and then,
but it's getting there in a man-made way.
Right. But then in Midwest, specifically in Ohio, we have a lot of excess water problem in the soils, and that's why we have drainage. So you are trying to manage water in a way that you actually take water out of the system, and that's how you are managing the soil water so that you can grow your crops and do your field operations on time.
So can water damage the soil?
Not so much of soil, but it can definitely damage your crops.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's just the soil, like if you look at the wetlands, there is always water standing there. But there are some vegetation that grow in those soils, but that's usually not economical interest for us.
Right.
So whenever we talk about your typical crops, they usually don't like water unless they are something like rice,
mm-hmm.
where more water is, it actually makes sense.
Yeah, I kind of always wondered, you know, how farmers get by with these low fields that flood in the spring and maybe the fall. We get a lot of rain in the spring and the creek comes up every year, two or three, four times. That field gets covered.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's good because the water brings in matter or soil from other places and deposits it there after it goes away. That's good, I guess, as long as you haven't planted.
All right. Well, it really depends, Mike. It's in situations like drainage ditches, you really don't want that drainage ditch to overflow and come into your farm. In case of big river basins, where there is a lot of sediment in the river that's coming and then flooding occurs, like Mississippi River, and then some of the sediment gets deposited, that's probably really good for the crops. But ideal situation, long time back when the settlers came in, the only way we can actually grow crops in our area, like Midwest, is because we started draining the natural wetlands and some of the soils that already had too much a high water table.
Mm-hmm.
So the drainage systems that we have, they were built probably a couple hundred years ago when they had the drainage ditches, and then ideally you want that drainage water to flow from your farm into the ditch and not the other way.
Right.
Especially at the beginning of planting season and the harvest.
Now, do you worry about standing water, mosquitoes, and all that kind of thing, or is that just another field?
That's probably out of my expert area.
Okay.
When we deal with wetlands, we especially on our research sites, we usually put some tablets and things like that to control the mosquito breeding and things like that. But I've been kind of not involved with that much that research.
Why don't we bring up a few photos?
Sure.
You have, I think, first where you work at the South Centers.
Yes, I thought that it might be really nice for our viewers to see how what exactly our South Centers look like. So this is an aerial photo, probably about 5 years ago. So the building in the center is our research and extension building and the Endeavor Center, and then the you can see some ponds on the left. That is all our aquaculture research, where they do a lot of research with fish and
fish farming type
fish
of
farming
stuff.
And some of the fish genetics as well.
Hmm.
And then on the right, you see those little green spots, green plots,
mm-hmm.
Kind of rectangular plots. So we have about 24 research plots under the soil water program, and those plots are instrumented for complete water balance. So we actually monitor water that's coming in, as well as water that's running off of the field as runoff, and also the water that is leaching through the drainage system.
And the drainage system is that brown line that kind of is on the perimeter of it?
The drainage system is actually the subsurface drainage system. So
okay.
You have some drainage tiles that are underneath, and then if you can go to the next slide. And this is a sump well where we have all the drainage pipe outlet that comes into the sump well, and this is where inside this is about 6 to 7 feet underground, and this is where all our instrumentation sits. All our runoff water is collected separately, drainage water is collected separately. We can sample at different intervals, and we can monitor how much water we are losing from that particular plot. So this is a typical setup. We have 24 plots, and then on top, other than that, we also have some other fields where we do some bioenergy research, which more relates to CRP lands, and then some organic plots. We are actually going into organic research at our research facility.
And this is the interior of your lab.
Yes, and I just thought I'll share what we do under the soil, water, and bioenergy program. This is our lab. And we have three different sections of our lab. The first section deals with the soils mainly, soil processing and things like that. And then we have analytical labs and one advanced analytical labs where we do most of the analysis, mainly looking at the soil nutrients in the soil, water as well as plants, sometimes greenhouse gases.
Mm.
We have state-of-the-art equipment in our lab that can do greenhouse gases, some of the micronutrients, heavy metals in soil, water, and plants.
What do we have a particular problem with anything in this area?
In this area, Southern Ohio, I recently joined the South Centers for sure, so I'm still learning a lot.
Okay. I wasn't sure if there was something you always look for
that
kept track of.
We don't really look at least we don't have anything that is alarming.
Right.
That we are looking at.
That's a good thing, because you're right outside what used to be a uranium enrichment plant. That's good.
And we are the neighbors of the uranium enrichment plant. But the good thing is the plant actually has their own monitoring system where once in a while they would come take some plant samples, soil samples, check for radiation and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't work. We work more towards serving the Southern Ohio population, and not just Southern Ohio, but also our state, some regional and international levels, where we try to help farmers for sustainable agriculture. That's
right.
Been the main focus, and that's where the soil health comes into effect as well. So
yeah, because we learned a big lesson back in the Dust Bowl days when they just farmed it to death, and then the the topsoil just blew away.
Definitely, and that's why it's interesting that we still have the soil as a major focus, starting in 1930s where we had the dust bowls, and now the focus is shifting more towards sustainability, where we're thinking about how do you build or maintain that health of the soil.
And probably not just maintain while you're getting crops off of it, but enriching it at the same time.
Definitely, and that's been the main focus. The NRCS has been doing a lot of work on soil health, and the concept of soil health actually, it just means that just as you can relate to a healthy person. If you say a healthy person, you just think about a normal person who can live their life with a good health. So that we want the same thing from soil. Even if you're growing crops and taking production out of the soil, you want that soil to sustain for a long time. So that's what.
I don't know if I'd be good soil or not because I got a little bit extra.
Well, a soil that is good at one place can be not so good at another place. It really depends on location and the type of crop that you're trying to grow.
Right. Hey, what are we seeing here?
So this is one of our cover crop trials. So recently, Dr. Rafiq Islam is our program leader, and he's one of the researchers who started the cover crop trials early, probably about a decade ago.
Okay, so a cover crop, is that something that's planted at the same time as the regular crop that you're trying to harvest, or is this an in-between stage?
So this is what you're trying to achieve is you always maintain some cover on your soil.
Okay.
And some of these cover crops, you actually intercrop them. So somewhere around harvest time, you can actually plant them while you still have the corn or soybean.
Okay.
And then they grow into the throughout the winter. We usually select some varieties that are winter hardy. Something similar to wheat that would go dormant during the winter and then start growing back up whenever it warms up a little.
What do you have planted here?
So I won't be able to identify all of them. I'm not an agronomist, but we do a lot of research on oilseed radish, some red clover, rye, and you can see an example of oilseed radish. I wanted to mention oilseed radish.
Is this something we can eat or not?
Well, the purpose is to keep it in the soil.
Okay.
At least
so it's not a crop.
It's not really a crop. Once in a while, you can take one out and eat. It's fine, but it takes probably about 1 to 2 pounds of seed per acre for oilseed radish.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I wanted to mention that here is because a lot of farmers do conventional till, and you have that plow layer formed,
right,
which is really hard to break.
Mm-hmm.
So oilseed radishes have shown some good potential to break that compaction. So that's what the purpose is for oilseed radishes. And then our main recommendation with respect to cover crops is that you go for a mix of cover crops instead of just one specific cover crop.
Hmm.
And then what you're trying to do is diversify your crop in the soil, and it's an interdependency where your crop is actually helping the soil build its health. And then the soil, which maintains its health, it's going to help your next crop, which is your actual cash crop,
right,
grow better. So some of these cover crops actually help you fix nitrogen.
Hmm.
So you don't have to, you can save some input cost next season and use that nitrogen from the cover crops.
Whatever cover crop is has gone dormant and then rotted and then it goes back into
before
it.
Before planting.
Okay, go back to next one. There. What are we looking at here besides the worm?
This again shows the advantage of having a cover crop or a continuous cover on your soils.
Mm-hmm.
So these are soils from our plots, and you can see some root nodules there. So these root nodules are actually from the legume cover crops. So the legume crops, they're known to fix nitrogen through these root nodules.
So that's a normal thing.
That's a normal thing.
Okay.
And that's a good thing. Those are the nodules. Those nodules are the thing, ones that actually have a lot of nitrogen. And
once that breaks down, then it's instant fertilizer.
Well, over a period of time,
right.
a few months.
Oh, well, that's...
is when you would have that advantage of that nitrogen available to the... It's a slow process, which is even good for the crop,
mm-hmm.
so that they can slowly take up the nitrogen.
Right. Do we have any other pictures?
We have a lot of them.
Okay, here we go.
So kind of switching gears here, we have our bioenergy research, and then we were probably one of the first research stations to bring in miscanthus as a bioenergy alternative crop. So we have trials on switchgrass, miscanthus, and several other warm season grasses. One of the ideas was instead of using your regular or usual cropland, why can't we use marginal lands for bioenergy purposes? And how do you do that sustainably? And can you also apply some municipal solid waste? And if you want to improve those lands, so we have trials where we try to use gypsum and municipal solid waste as a combination to get some nutrients to these bioenergy crops, and more information definitely on our website.
So with that grass being bioenergy, who's using it and how?
Our plots are...
I wouldn't burn it in my fireplace, right?
I don't think so. you wouldn't want to, but with our plots, we had enough biomass. The miscanthus actually can give you up to 10 to 12 tons, in some cases 18 tons of biomass per acre. So we had enough biomass that one of the local hospitals actually, we just donated all of that biomass to them, and they used it for their own energy purposes. So they were looking into making that into pallets.
Hmm.
And then using it for burning.
Now, would you have to bundle it in a way into like a log or a square or something?
And that is something that they're still looking into. I'm
okay.
not sure how they did it. The way we shipped it to them was in just like your corn
just
bales.
Cut.
We just created bales and then shipped it to them. And then they are looking into different options on how to use it.
Yeah. How often does that crop get that high? Is it yearly?
Every year.
Year. Okay.
Every year it grows that high, about 10 to 12 feet in some cases.
Hmm.
So it's just amazing. It just has a really vigorous growth, and the good thing is it is not an invasive species. It cannot be because its reproductive stage is during the winter months.
Mm-hmm.
So it cannot spread unless you're just maintaining it in your farm.
Okay. Now, I think you brought, I don't know if you want to call it an experiment or your soil testing.
Yes.
Now, what are you looking for? What's important when you test soil? What do you look for? What's good? What's bad?
So what happens is farmers, when they're dealing with their thousands of acres of land, they want to know what's in the soil, what's the nutrient status, and how good their soil is so that they can make some decisions with respect to what to apply.
Right.
One of the important factors is organic matter.
Mm-hmm.
And the more the organic matter, the better for the crops. And
we have a lot of clay around here, and I think that more organic matter in a clay will break it up and make it better.
Right. And then, so what we say with respect to organic matter is the core indicator of soil health. The overall soil health.
Mm-hmm.
So Dr. Rafiq Islam, he worked on his on this particular area throughout his PhD when he got it, and then he ended up developing what we call a very easy to use soil quality field test kit. So the farmers don't have to send their soils to the lab more often. They can just test their soil on a very rapid basis,
mm-hmm.
and more often. And this is a very handy tool that we're offering. And then what it has is just a simple reagent bottle. And that's the only reagent you're going to use. And then one empty bottle. And then a really nice piece of instructions.
Okay.
Only four steps of instructions. So not
that's
very
easy.
Yeah. And then there is a referring a color chart that you can refer to which relates to the quality of your soil.
Okay, what are you measuring with that?
And then you can look at the color chart. It actually gives you the value of your organic matter, the range of organic matter content, and then nitrogen availability in the soil.
Okay.
So I think
I wasn't sure if there was a pH content in that or not.
There is no pH content on that, but these are just the primary indicators of the soil quality.
And I think you could probably test for pH fairly easy anyway, right?
And I thought it might be a good idea to put you to the work and then have you test it a soil or two here while we are talking.
Okay.
So what we can do is I'm going to have you do it. And you take one. We're going to start with the reagent first. So, mind you, this reagent, if you get it on your clothes, it's going to stay there forever. So just be careful. Now, you're going to take two droppers full of reagent and put it in this glass bottle.
Okay, so squeeze it and pull it out.
Pull it out. And then one more time. It's probably about 2 milliliters of reagent.
Okay.
And then you kind of bring the whole thing to level. We have a marking over here that says 20.
Right.
So you're going to add some water, any water. It doesn't have to be bottled water. It can be tap water.
Okay.
So this.
So that won't affect the output of it?
It shouldn't affect your output too much. Now, once you got, this is your magic solution in a way.
Okay.
And now you just take one tablespoon or one plastic spoon full of soil.
Like level? Or is this good?
Even more is fine. You can probably take more.
Where is this from?
So this is from our research site. And then you're going to just put that in. I don't know if you need help with this, but here. And then...
Yeah, I'm good.
All right. You're doing good, Mike.
Everywhere.
You're doing good.
All right.
You always talk about dirt, so I thought it might be a good opportunity to get your hands dirty a little.
Sure.
So once you cap this bottle, you're going to take it in your hand, and you're going to shake it for 2 minutes.
Shake like a Polaroid picture.
Yeah. And then keep shaking. I know we don't have enough time for
you. No, we've got 5.5 minutes.
Okay. So you can keep shaking, or we can move ahead because
we can move.
What I did was, I got two soils, and just before our show, you can hear the soil.
Yeah.
Just before our show, I prepared two of these. And let's see if we can.
Okay, what I'm doing is closer to this one?
Yes. So I really cannot tell unless we look at it. But so I have two different soils. What it tells you is after you shake it for 2 minutes, you're going to let it settle for 10 minutes or so that all the soil settles down.
Okay.
And as you can see, there is some color solution. On the color chart, you see dark pink. Going into light pink. So the darker the color, the poorer the quality of the soil.
Okay.
And the lighter the color, what happens is this reagent that we have, it actually reacts with the organic matter in the soil, and specifically the active carbon in the soil. And the more it reacts, the more it loses its color. So the more it loses the color, that's better for you.
Okay.
That's better for the crop. So... We're looking at these two soils, and
so they don't look too good, do they? Or
so you can see this particular soil has a little more darker color.
Yeah.
Compared to this one, so you can definitely tell that this soil has less carbon or organic matter compared to this one. Now the reason you're not seeing really all the color gone is because this is not a very good soil from an agronomic perspective.
Okay.
The soil that I got, this soil is probably about a meter deep.
Oh, okay.
From a very poor marginal soil. And this is the topsoil from the same plot. So So if you take an agricultural soil, you will probably, and you can go to the slide that we have.
Yeah, what do you farm? Do you farm like the first 12 inches?
The farming is, most of the farming happens in the top 12 inches because your plow layer is 6 to 7 inches.
Mm-hmm.
And then the roots go, usually the roots go pretty deep, but most of the roots, about 60 to 70% of the roots are within the first foot to foot and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where you want really to have a lot of activity, a lot of nutrition, and all the good quality soil.
So I know there's a lot of places around here that have been reclaimed mining area.
Right.
And a lot of times that's not very good.
That's true.
Because they've taken that soil dirt from down mm-hmm. way below and then just smoothed it over. And it hasn't had a chance, you know, with grass and trees and all that to add all the organics back to it.
Yes, and it takes at least some time to reclaim those kinds of soils, and that's where some amendments like gypsum, compost, some of the manure amendments, those things actually help to reclaim those soils, and then you can actually start the production. But commercial production is probably far away for those soils.
What's a gypsum do?
Gypsum
is it like a chalky type of stuff?
It is, yes. And sometimes it is available naturally, sometimes it is industrial product.
Mm-hmm.
But what it does is it provides some good texture. It improves the texture of the soil and the water retention, the water movement properties of the soil. So eventually it helps the soil
so
form a good
when
structure.
It dries out, it's not just a brick.
It
breaks apart easier, right?
The soil, yes.
Right.
Yes.
Okay, so we've got that.
So this we have available from the OSU South Centers, but I should mention this. We have limited outreach with respect to how many kits we can provide.
Mm-hmm.
So the Technology Commercialization Office of OSU is actually partnering with a company out of Dayton to commercialize this and make it available for farmers. And then the liquid that you saw, it's probably going to be in a tablet form.
So oh, okay.
That it's easier to handle.
Right.
So it's coming out pretty soon.
And here's your contact info.
Yes. Anyone who wants any information about this can contact us or just go to our website, and there is enough information about the soil quality test kit that farmers can get help about.
Okay. So is this free or is there a charge?
There is a minimum charge because our lab has to do some cost recovery about for all these supplies.
Right.
So there is always some charge, but it's probably minimal compared to the outside soil testing.
Right.
And, it's available.
Okay.
We had one more event coming up.
Oh, okay.
I wanted our viewers to know about that. And July 28th is going to be our soil water program field night, where we actually show just the general public all our research facility and talk about soils. So
sort of like an open house and a little informational session?
Yes.
And when is that, July 28th?
Yes, that's right.
What time?
It usually starts after office hours, so around 5 o'clock.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So I hope you have enjoyed and got some information from this. Thanks for watching AgriTalk, and we'll see you next month.